Welcome back to another episode of the Ninja Nerd Podcast. Today we have a new episode on Cushing's syndrome. We're going to learn all about that cortisol. So the first thing we have to do is introduce the man, the myth, the legend. His name is Zachary Murphy. How you feeling, buddy?
Man, I'm feeling good, buddy. I'm feeling really good. Thanks for having me again on this podcast, baby.
I love it. What do you think? Cushing's is a pretty cool, I shouldn't say it's a cool disease.
It's great.
It's a very detrimental disease, it's an interesting topic is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it's very common, like endocrine disorder. I think it's really important to understand. I think it's something that we should all be aware of and be able to recognize. It's also a loved kind of topic for the board question. So I think it's a really, really high yield topic.
All right, then it's important that we have to go over it. So let's go ahead and get started. But remember, first, guys, please check out ninjanerd.org. Grab your subscription, a 3-month, 6-month, a year, whatever floats your boat. But get that membership. Grab your notes, your illustrations, follow along with us and really try and grasp this topic because it'll be important that you do. So first thing we have to talk about is the normal physiology behind Cushing syndrome. So let's talk about physiology of the cortisol pathway. What is cortisol, Zach, and really what's the pathway?
Yeah, so I think the basic concept of understanding like any kind of disease is really digging down to the physiology, the pathophysiology itself. So when you talk about cortisol, cortisol is a steroid hormone that's actually made by the adrenal cortex, a particular part of the adrenal cortex, very specifically called the zona fasciculata. Now, the zona fasciculata is, it produces cortisol, but it produces it based upon a stimulus, and that stimulus is ACTH. Now, ACTH is produced by the anterior pituitary. And now when anterior pituitary produces ACTH, there's something that stimulates the anterior pituitary to make ACTH. And that's a hormone called CRH, which is made by the hypothalamus. So what I want you to understand with the basic concept of the cortisol pathway is that the hypothalamus produces something called corticotropin releasing hormone that tells the anterior pituitary to make ACTH. And then the ACTH tells the cells of the zona fasciculata of the adrenal cortex to produce cortisol. So it's really important to have that basic physiological pathway down pat.
All right, we've got it. Next thing that's on our list here, cortisol target organs and their effects. So when cortisol is released, where does it go? What organs does it affect? And then what happens when your cortisol levels become too high?
Yeah, that's a great point. So I think the big thing is now that we know how cortisol is produced, what kind of target organs does it hit? It hits a ton of target organs. So it can affect the central nervous system, particularly like your mood, your memory function. So obviously if the cortisol levels are a little bit too high, it can precipitate things like depression. It can precipitate things like memory loss and sometimes even psychosis. Cardiovascular system, I say, is probably one of the most profound systems that is affected by cortisol. And so what I want you to remember is that it increases a function and the effect of the sympathetic nervous system. So you have these receptors of your sympathetic nervous system called your adrenergic receptors. There's alpha 1, beta 1. So in those particular scenarios, cortisol has been shown to increase the actual sensitivity of those receptors so that when norepinephrine or epinephrine bind to it, the effect is amplified. So imagine hitting the beta 1 receptors on the heart. The heart rate will go up. The contractility of the heart will go up. And so the cardiac output will go up and the blood pressure will go up. That's one thing. The second thing is it also hits the alpha 1 receptor. So it makes them more sensitive to norepinephrine, epinephrine. So then if you hit the alpha 1 receptors in the blood vessels, those suckers will vasoconstrict. Your systemic vascular resistance will go up and then your actual blood pressure will shoot up as well. So one of the very common manifestations of high cortisol is hypertension. It's a type of hypertension which is refractory and we don't see it often in the normal population. It's usually younger or super older individuals that they have a new onset hypertension. We call that secondary hypertension. The other thing is it has a very profound effect on the endocrine and metabolic system. So I want you to remember as cortisol, it's kind of like a secondary stress hormone. So when you're stressed, you want your blood pressure to go up so you perfuse organs like your muscles, and you want your heart rate to go up as well. But you also want to have a lot of glucose for those muscles to utilize. And so what happens to cortisol is it tells the liver to actually do something called gluconeogenesis and glycogenolysis, which basically just puts a lot of glucose into your bloodstream. And that shoots the blood glucose levels up. But it also can actually kind of suppress the insulin from being produced and also prevent the insulin from having a good efficacy, kind of like an insulin resistance, if you will. And so this can have a diabetogenic effect, so it can precipitate diabetes in some people. The other thing is it can cause an intense lipolysis. So it can break down triglycerides into fatty acids and glycerol. But the problem is that cortisol is weird. It can really redistribute those actual fatty acids into multiple different areas. But the most common areas that it redistributes that fat to is in the central aspect of our body. And so what happens is they look like they gained a ton of weight. So they have a lot of central abdominal obesity. They have a very swollen moon face. They have this big dorsal cervical fat pad, which we call buffalo hump. And that's really the unfortunate result of the lipolysis with central fat redistribution. The other endocrine kind of effect it can have is it can actually suppress. So when cortisol levels are really high, it can actually suppress GnRH production, which is called gonadotropin releasing hormone. That can then inhibit FSH and LH release. And so that actually inhibits the production of testosterone, estrogen, progesterone, and subsequently and respectively in males and females. So obviously libido can go down for males because of the drop in testosterone. And then they can have also come some menstrual irregularities associated in women due to the estrogen and progesterone abnormalities. One really weird thing that is really important, and we'll get into this a little bit in a second, but one particular weird feature that can happen. So remember I told you is that the adrenal cortex is responsible for producing cortisol. So if cortisol is being produced in high amounts, we have to think about why, and we'll talk about that in just a second. But sometimes the problem can be because the adrenal cortex has a problem with it, like a tumor, or it could be because the pituitary gland is making way too much ACTH, right? In situations where you make a lot of ACTH, it actually tells not only cortisol to be produced in high amounts, but it tells androgens to be produced in high amounts, such as DHEA. And that can actually cause a lot of effect on females because it can actually cause them to have a lot of problems with hair growth, particularly a lot of hirsutism. So then I'm not even kidding. They may grow like a full on beard. And then they can have a lot of terrible acne. So that's a terrible situation that you can see, but you'll only see that in the particular type of etiologies where the pituitary gland is the problem. So we call that Cushing's disease. And we'll talk about that in a second. Okay. Cortisol in high levels also has a very immunosuppressive effect. So imagine neutrophils, whenever they're supposed to roll on the blood vessel, we call that margination, and then squeeze out of the blood vessels to go find a pathogen or inflamed area. We call that diapedesis and chemotaxis. Cortisol shuts all that down. So now the neutrophils don't have the ability to leave the bloodstream. The other thing is it actually prevents T cells from being able to proliferate and produce cytokines. And it also tells your plasma cells to stop producing antibodies. So if you can't produce antibodies, you can't develop a proper immune response, and you can't actually fight off bacteria with neutrophils. Do you think that you're going to be now able to fight off possible types of bacterial and fungal infections? No. And so now these patients are at very high risk of infections. And one of the big things is very high risk of fungal infections, especially skin infections. So watch out for that. And then the other thing is it has a very profound musculoskeletal effect. You're like, man, what does it not affect? But yeah, it does do this as well. So here's one of the things I want you to think about. Cortisol is really into breaking things down. So it breaks down fat. It breaks down it actually helps to break down glycogen and help to increase your glucose. It breaks down lipids so that you have a lot of like fatty acids for energy, but unfortunately it redistributes to the central parts of your body, but it also breaks down proteins and impairs collagen from being synthesized. So think about proteins in the muscles. Those are very, very crucial to size. Now mass of the muscle will kind of go down, and this predominantly affects the extremity. So they have these very thin atrophy type of extremities, and then you impair collagen synthesis, which is important with bones. So now the bones are super frail and weak and porous. And now they have osteoporosis and increased risk of fractures. So that's a terrible situation. The last thing is that the integumentary system is also very dependent upon collagen. So imagine collagen is a very important part of our dermis. And so now if you don't have collagen, the skin is very thin, very fragile, and very easy to tear. And they can also have a lot of ecchymoses or kind of like bruising and a lot of stretch marks due to the thin skin, which we call striae, which is very prominent over the abdominal area particularly. One more kind of like additional effect that you can see. So remember I told you, when cortisol is produced by the adrenal cortex, one very profound stimulus is ACTH. And I told you that in high levels of ACTH, you can have masculinization. So that's in Cushing's disease. And then in another situation, if you have high ACTH, which causes, again, cortisol to be produced in high amounts, not only does it cause high cortisol amounts, also not only does it cause things like an increase in androgen production, but whenever you make ACTH, it actually comes from the same precursor that makes MSH, melanocyte stimulating hormone. So whenever there's high ACTH, guess what else there's also high? MSH. And so then this can cause melanin production to really increase. And so the skin becomes very dark and hyperpigmented. And this is very prominent usually in these patients. Again, primarily in a pituitary lesion, nothing to do with the adrenal cortex. So just remember a quick thing here. All of these effects can be seen in Cushing's, Cushing's syndrome, but Cushing's disease can potentially have two other effects, hyperpigmentation, and they can also have the other effect, which is particularly, again, causing that problem with the androgen production. So they can have the masculinization. So we'll get into that in just a second here, but really that covers the target organ effects, the kind of problems whenever cortisol is high, Rob.
All right. Now we talked about what cortisol is, where it exerts its effects, the organs it exerts its effects. It sounds like it exerts its effects on absolutely everything.
Yeah.
It's pretty widespread. So now we understand why the detrimental effects of having high cortisol, but how does this happen? That's the next question. We have to understand, what are the causes of high cortisol levels? Are these people just stressed out beyond all belief? Like, why does this happen? Why do we have high cortisol levels?
Yeah, that's a great question. So now, okay, we got the point of, we know the cortisol pathway, like you said, we know the target organs and the effects and what happens when the cortisol level is high, but now we get the question, what causes the high cortisol? And so it comes back to that pathway again. So the adrenal cortex is the one that's responsible for making cortisol. But again, you have to remember that cortisol production is tied to ACTH production, which is made by the pituitary. So this leads into two types of, like, what we can call a syndrome and disease, or we can also term this primary and secondary hypercortisolism. So primary hypercortisolism is also known as Cushing syndrome. And what this means by primary means that it's due to the adrenal cortex. There is a disease of the adrenal cortex where it is pumping out large amounts of cortisol. And if it's pumping out this large amounts of cortisol, you'll see all the effects that we just talked about. So the question then comes, okay, what's wrong with the adrenal cortex? It could be that there's a tumor there, and this tumor has gained the capacity to make lots of cortisol. Could be an adenoma, could be a carcinoma of some type. The other thing that's actually becoming more common is imagine for a second, a patient doesn't have a problem with their adrenal cortex, but they're taking something that acts like cortisol in large amounts. Maybe they're taking a steroid. Maybe they have an autoimmune disease. Maybe they have a COPD problem. Maybe there's some type of reason that they need to be on chronic steroid therapy. Well, that chronic steroid that they could be taking acts just like cortisol, and it can mimic these high cortisol levels and produce all the pathophysiological effects that we just talked about. So that would be, again, Cushing syndrome. It could be an adrenal tumor that's pumping this out, or it could be that the patient doesn't have a tumor, but they're actually getting medications, exogenous kind of source here, where they're actually kind of taking in a particular medication and causing them now to have these artificially elevated cortisol levels. Now, one more thing to kind of add on here, because what we'll talk about in the diagnostic workup, is whenever your adrenal cortex pumps out all this cortisol, there's something called a negative feedback mechanism. So imagine you want to keep things at homeostasis, right? So if you produce cortisol in high amounts, what it should do is tell the pituitary, hey, pituitary, there's too much cortisol. You can shut down the ACTH production, and so that way I can shut down my cortisol production. And so what will happen is ACTH levels will tend to fall and be lower in the primary hypercortisolism or the Cushing syndrome patient, where the adrenal gland is the problem. They'll have high cortisol, but will suppress their ACTH production. And again, the two causes is a tumor or they're taking steroids that act like cortisol. The other cause of high cortisol is a secondary problem. In other words, it is not the adrenal gland. It's a thing that's affecting the adrenal gland. What affects the adrenal gland? ACTH. Where is ACTH produced? The pituitary gland. In rare cases, which we'll talk about in just a second, it could come from a tumor other than the pituitary gland. But we'll talk about that in just a second. So secondary hypercortisolism is a problem with high ACTH. This pituitary gland or this tumor somewhere is pumping out ACTH, telling the adrenal cortex to make lots and lots of cortisol. So one of the big diagnostic differences that we'll talk about is that primary hypercortisolism or Cushing syndrome has high cortisol and low ACTH. Secondary hypercortisolism also called Cushing's disease, has high ACTH and then subsequently high cortisol levels. So why is the pituitary pumping out all this ACTH? It may also be because it has a tumor, an adenoma, super, super common. But then the other thing that I said is it could be a tumor somewhere else. We call this an ectopic site of ACTH production. In other words, it's an area that gained the capacity to produce this hormone. Usually this is a paraneoplastic syndrome. So in other words, it needs that you have a neoplasia, most commonly small cell lung cancer. Don't forget that. Small cell lung cancer cells can gain the capacity to produce ACTH and then tell the adrenal cortex to make more cortisol. So again, we got primary hypercortisolism or Cushing syndrome, that's adrenal tumor, steroid therapy. Secondary hypercortisolism, also known as Cushing disease, could be due to a pituitary tumor or an ectopic site of ACTH production like small cell lung cancer. Primary hypercortisolism of Cushing syndrome has high cortisol, low ACTH. Secondary hypercortisolism or Cushing's disease has high ACTH and high cortisol. And that really covers a big point here on the causes, Rob.
Alrighty, so we've covered a lot up to this point, and we really have a good understanding of Cushing's syndrome versus Cushing's disease, some of the clinical features that we're looking out for, like a moon face, buffalo hump. At this point, you have a pretty good idea that the patient you're seeing may have Cushing's syndrome, or maybe even Cushing's disease. But really, now we have to figure out, how do you even differentiate that? How do you at least say, oh, you have Cushing's disease, you have Cushing's syndrome. How do I diagnose this patient? Zach, let's go through the diagnostic workup and figure this out.
Yeah, so I think that's a great point. So whenever you have a patient who comes in with those classic features, and I'd say the classic ones are, they have refractory hypertension, that's a secondary hypertension, maybe some type of depression or memory loss. That's nonspecific though, but if they have really bad high blood pressure and they also have hyperglycemia, they also have very thin skin with abdominal striae, ecchymosis, and very important is that fat redistribution, like Rob said. So the central obesity, they have the moon face, they have the buffalo hump. That's really concerning for a problem of high cortisol. So then we got to say, like Rob said, is it Cushing's syndrome or Cushing's disease? So what we do is we start off with some screening tests. And you need at least 2 out of 3 of these to be positive to move on to the next kind of testing to really say this patient definitely could have Cushing's. So how do we do this? First test that's been very important is the low dose dexamethasone suppression test. Dexamethasone kind of acts like a steroid. It is a steroid. So it can act like cortisol if you want to think about it. So what you do is you give the patient 1 milligram of dexamethasone around the nighttime, so 11 p.m., and then you measure their cortisol at 8 a.m. And how you kind of interpret this test is when you give dexamethasone in a normal patient, it should act like cortisol. If it acts like cortisol, then generally you should have higher cortisol levels. And what they should do in a normal person is high cortisol should suppress the pituitary gland from making ACTH. And the ACTH levels should drop. And then subsequently, the cortisol levels should drop. So if the cortisol in the morning is low, then you know that this is actually not Cushing syndrome. That is a normal response because you give the dexamethasone, it should suppress ACTH levels and the cortisol level should drop. If it does, then you do not have Cushing's and you don't even need to move further down the testing kind of like rabbit hole. If, however, the cortisol is high, that tells me that the pituitary is either not giving a crap about the dexamethasone and it says, I don't care if the cortisol levels are high, I'm still going to produce ACTH and the cortisol is still going to be high. Or the adrenal cortex is going to say, I don't care about the steroid, I'm still going to continue to produce cortisol regardless of what you tell me. So if the cortisol levels are high despite the 1 milligram of dexamethasone and it's not able to suppress cortisol production, then that is a probable Cushing syndrome or Cushing's disease. So that's the first test that we should do. Low dose dexamethasone. If the cortisol does drop after they get that and it's low, you don't have to do anything else. If it is high despite the dexamethasone, it's definitely a possibility that they have Cushing's. Go to the next test. If you do that, the 2 other tests that we like to add on, you should at least do the low dose dexamethasone suppression test, but the other 2 tests could be, again, pick which one you prefer. The urinary cortisol over a 24-hour period is a pretty easy, excellent test. And what you look for is the cortisol within the urine to be really high. Cortisol is excreted via the urine. So if your cortisol levels are high because you have a tumor in your adrenal cortex or your pituitary, and your cortisols are just kind of like running through your kidneys pretty quickly, you would expect it to be a lot higher than normal. So if it's really really high, like four times the upper limit of normal in the urine, that's an, again, a positive test and suggestive that the cortisol is high and they definitely could possibly have Cushing's. Another thing is that cortisol is also excreted via the saliva. And so if your cortisol levels are naturally in higher production amounts, you can expect there to be higher levels of cortisol in your saliva. So if there's high cortisol levels in a saliva test that you take at night, again, this would be suggestive of a probable Cushing syndrome. So do the low dose dexamethasone, the 24-hour urinary cortisol, and the late night salivary cortisol. If at least two out of those three are positive, you then can say Cushing's is probable. I need to move on. If the low dose dexamethasone suppression test again tells you that it did suppress cortisol production, don't do any more testing. If the urinary cortisol over 24 hours is normal or not four times the upper limit of normal, you don't need to do any more testing. If the late night salivary cortisol is again low or it's normal, again, you don't need to do any more testing. Cushing's has been excluded. But if two out of those three are positive, move on to the next test. What's the next thing we do? Okay, we can say now that if these tests were positive, cortisol is high. So Cushing's is definitely probable. But I don't know if it's primary and I don't know if it's secondary. I have no idea. Well, you remember what I told you? If the pituitary is the problem, what would happen to the ACTH levels? They would go up. And so if I were to check their ACTH level and it was really high, what would that make me think? Oh, it could be a pituitary or an ectopic, you know, ACTH production site, like a small cell lung cancer. Okay. What if the ACTH is low? Well, I remember, Zach, you said if it was a primary problem where it was the adrenal gland, it produces cortisol, but then suppresses the pituitary from making ACTH. That would be a primary problem, right? Like Cushing's syndrome. Absolutely. So check the ACTH level. If it's high, it's secondary hypercortisolism. So it may be a pituitary or a small cell lung cancer problem. If it's low, that supports a primary or Cushing's syndrome type of problem, an adrenal gland problem. So if you've done that and the ACTH level kind of helps you kind of determine, oh, it's primary or it's secondary, how can I really prove this? So then I can kind of go down and further differentiate the next part. So I've said, okay, I have primary or secondary, but the problem that I'm kind of stuck with now is with secondary hypercortisolism or Cushing's disease, I have no idea if it's the pituitary or if it's the small cell lung cancer. So what you can do is you can do something called a high dose dexamethasone suppression test. You give them a really high dose, 8 milligrams. You give it at night and then you measure the cortisol in the morning. Now this dose is high enough to actually suppress the pituitary, even if there is a tumor there. So if you give them all this dexamethasone, it should suppress the pituitary from producing ACTH. Problem is it will not suppress the ectopic site from producing ACTH. So if I give them this high dose dex and the ACTH levels drop and cortisol levels drop, it's pituitary. If I give them this high dose dex and the ACTH doesn't change and the cortisol doesn't change, it's an ectopic site. And that is a way of being able to differentiate which is the cause of the secondary hypercortisolism. Is it pituitary or is it an ectopic site? Now, if you can't do the high dose dexamethasone suppression test, there's another alternative, and this is called the CRH stimulation test. It's just basically, think about it. You give CRH, your pituitary, it's actually very sensitive to CRH. It has tons of receptors. So the ectopic site, it doesn't give a crap about the CRH, just so you know. So if you give the patient CRH, their pituitary is going to hyper respond and it's going to pump out tons of ACTH and their cortisol will go up. So if you give them CRH and their ACTH and cortisol levels go up, it's pituitary. If you give them the CRH and their ACTH and cortisol levels don't change at all, then it's ectopic. Or it could even be adrenal, okay? But that's a really, really big point. It's just an alternative to the high-dose dexamethasone suppression test. Okay, so we've gone through. We did the screening test, found high cortisol, did the ACTH level, figured out if it was primary, secondary, did the high-dose dexamethasone suppression test or the CRH stim test to determine which type of secondary hypercortisolism it is. Is it pituitary or ectopic? The next thing is once we've kind of like weaved all these things out, we've determined if it's primary or secondary, and then which is the cause of the secondary, the next thing is to do some imaging studies to actually find those tumors. And so how would you do that? Well, if you think it's an adrenal tumor, get a CT or MRI of the adrenal gland. If it's a pituitary tumor, get an MRI of the brain. If it's an actual ectopic site of production, with the most common one being small cell lung cancer, but there's other tumors that can do this, you should just scan their chest, their abdomen, and their pelvis, because sometimes renal cell carcinomas can do this, and sometimes pancreatic tumors can also do this as well. So you should just scan their chest, their abdomen, and their pelvis to look for that. But that, my friends, would really help you in determining, is there Cushing's? If there is it syndrome or is it some type of disease? And if it is the disease, which one is it due to? Is it pituitary or ectopic? And then once you've proven all that, find the tumor to actually prove this by getting an adrenal CT or MRI, by getting a pituitary MRI, or getting a CT of the chest, abdomen, pelvis. And then one last thing. Let's say that you do an adrenal CT or MRI because you're definitely concerned that it's a tumor, but you find no tumor. What was the other cause of Cushing syndrome? Steroid use. So how could you figure that one out? Ask them if they're taking steroids, look through their medical history and see if they've been taking that. Okay. But again, that would end off the diagnostic test here, Rob.
Alrighty. So we have either diagnosed Cushing syndrome or Cushing's disease. We went through all of this testing, like the amazing practitioners you all are. Got some great imaging.
Yeah.
Beautiful. We got a really good diagnostic workup. We figured it out at this point. Regardless of what that may be, we now have to say, okay, we're going to treat this patient. We're going to make them better. The treatment is relatively straightforward, Zach, right?
Absolutely. This is probably one of those things where you're very thankful as a student to learn about this topic, because the treatment's pretty straightforward. The diagnosis is a heavy hitter, but treatment is actually pretty straightforward. So if their Cushing syndrome is because they're taking steroids, and again, you got the adrenal CT MRI and it showed no tumor, their diagnostic workup showed a primary hypercortisolism or a Cushing syndrome, then just taper down their steroid. You may just need to decrease their steroids a little bit too high, and it's just causing enough to, again, have high cortisol type of organ effects and suppress the ACTH production. Okay. The other thing is, if it's an adrenal tumor, generally you just cut the adrenal gland out. I mean, but in the interim, you should probably continue to suppress that high cortisol levels. And so what you do is give them ketoconazole, or there's another drug called metirapone. And basically they shut down cortisol synthesis, and so that those target organs that they're hitting with all that high cortisol isn't continuing to cause problems. And then you'll just bridge them through those medications to cutting out the tumor so they don't continue to keep producing these high levels of cortisol. If it's a pituitary tumor, again, you just resect it. Usually they do this preferably via a transsphenoidal approach. And then if it's a site of ectopic ACTH production, you have to remove the tumor. But again, depending upon the tumor, where it is, what type of tumor it is, they may need extensive like chemo, radiation, surgical removal. But that's a long kind of like time frame where they're not actually continuously being suppressed from the high cortisol. So you should still give them ketoconazole or metirapone to continue to suppress the high cortisol levels, so it doesn't continue to keep causing the negative effects on their organ systems. And that generally would be the treatment of Cushing syndrome or Cushing's disease, Rob.
All right. And that concludes our episode on Cushing syndrome. We hope you all like it. Zach, give us this famous send off here.
Well, engineers, I really did hope that you guys like it. I hope it made sense. And I love you guys. I thank you guys. And as always, until next time.